Chapter 30. The Gardening Begins.
"Forget those old problems," exclaimed the captain. We have new ones, tons of new ones." But his face told me that they were only problems of clarification and not conviction. He had tasted a truly coherent idea of how our world actually works, an idea that makes sense, an idea that showed there was real justice behind things, and most importantly, an idea that gave us and all of those we love, everyone, a real way out of every kind of pain. And this knowledge had given his face a new glow, atop the healthy glow from the poses. "I mean, first question, if the sergeant doesn't lie about the rug, does he still get the extra money?" "Of course," I said. "The lie and the extra money are not connected. There is no relationship of cause and effect between them in the moment. They just happen one right after the other. And so part of our mind, a wrong part of our mind, jumps on and says that the lie brought the extra money. But the reason why a lie does not bring extra money is so obvious that the entire population of our world, for as long as our world has been around, has simply terribly overlooked it." "What? How? How? If it's so obvious, how and why by so many?" "Seeds," I said bluntly. "But anyway, you must grasp this. If a lie was the real cause that brought you extra money, then every time you tried to get extra money by lying, it should always work. But it doesn't. It's that simple. It proves that the lie is not the real cause of the extra money." He thought about it for a moment, and the ancient powerful inner winds in the right-hand channel moved, as it had moved for time with no beginning, and it blinded him once more. But how much longer? We were shoving its energy into the middle channel from this outside and the inside. For now, though, he missed the idea and spluttered. "But there are many other reasons why a lie might not always work to bring you extra money. Someone else has told the person the truth. The person has found out you tend to lie. The person doesn't care if the weaver eats enough or not." "No," I said, "think carefully. Think bigger. Your very life depends on it, and the lives of those two men out there, and the precious two boys you hope to find again, or the precious two you hope to find again. The real cause of the extra money should have and did actually dictate all the circumstances surrounding the entire event. The perceptions of the person who bought the rug, the perceptions of the sergeant, the amount of money there, the fact that it was market day, the fact that the people and events all came together in exactly the way needed for the extra money to be paid. This orchestration is the real cause. This is what real cause does. A lie cannot cause extra money. There's absolutely nothing similar between the one lie and the extra money. You may as well expect a corn seed to grow into a watermelon. Lies don't work to get you extra money because they don't make it come. You can lie and maybe the money comes, or you can lie and it doesn't come. Wake up, Captain. It's not the cause." He sat back and breathed a giant sigh. Then he held his head with both hands as if it were a balloon. "I mean," he finally said, "I mean, it makes sense. It really does. It's so," he looked out the window, "it just changes so much of what we do, so much of what we expect to work for us." "And just think about this," I added. "What would happen, I mean, in the world, if everyone began to see what really causes things, what really causes extra money, for example?" The captain turned and looked out the window and smiled ruefully. "Well, for one thing, if everyone realized that lying couldn't ever work, well, then I suppose we'd all just start telling the truth." I nodded and let it sink in for a moment. "But to go back to your question, the last question at least, yes, it's true. Even if the sergeant hadn't lied, He would have gotten the extra money because he already had the seeds, the vibration, of expecting extra money. I mean, someone who owed him an old forgotten debt would have showed up on that same day, or perhaps an uncle somewhere would have left him some money in his will, something like that. And that leads us to some other rules about the seeds. That is, they cover everything, and they never go away until they ripen. Cover everything? He said. Cover everything, I replied. I mean, there's not anything around us or inside us that is not happening because of the seeds. No good thing can ever happen unless you have done something good to someone else, so that a seed can be planted and then ripen in your own mind to make you see something as good. And no bad thing can happen unless you have done the opposite. Even the things that seem in between, things that seem just neutral, neither good nor bad, are happening because of the background seeds planted by the very way we misunderstand our world, just constantly. And from the other side, no seed is ever wasted. Nothing we ever do, nothing we ever say, nothing we ever think ever fails to plant a seed. And each of these seeds will patiently wait. They'll wait patiently in line for years, if necessary, to ripen. They never get forgotten. And beyond that, there is one more important thing that you need to know about the seeds. It is the answer to the first question you asked. Why did you have 5 years of back pain if you never caused anyone else 5 years of similar pain? I opened my hand and pushed a pit from a mango fruit into his palm. It was from the first fruit I'd ever gotten in my cell a few days before. You see, toward the end of the season, there is no food in India cheaper than a mango. They all fall down nearly at the same time. How much does the seed weigh? I asked. He lifted the pit in his hand. A few ounces, he replied. Can't be more than that. Then I pulled him to the window to look at the struggling little mango tree outside. And that tree, if it ever got watered and tended to, how much would it weigh? Why, I don't know. I suppose in time a few thousand pounds. Right, I said, and we sat down again. And so it's something important that you must understand. Seeds in the mind over time, they grow, they expand, they get bigger, just as much as seeds in nature do. And they never get old waiting to ripen. They never go away. There's nothing in the mind to make them age or spoil the way that physical seeds might do. And so you see, even just hitting another person on the back once for a few minutes, it could easily cause you 5 years of pain in your back later. The captain suddenly choked and then stared down at the ground and then looked up at me almost angrily. Impossible, he sputtered. What's impossible? I replied. Out of the question, he exclaimed. 5 years of pain for a few moments of excess in the heat of anger? What kind of justice is that? I thought there was some kind of justice here. Why that would make the result of the seed, well, I don't know, something like thousands of times greater than the seed itself. And he faltered then, and we both gazed down again at the mango pit, still lying in the palm. I can't believe that a seed in the mind would grow like those outside seeds do, I mean, to 1,000 times bigger than when they were planted. I waved around the room. Who does this room belong to? I asked. Why, the king, he replied. Ultimately, it belongs to the king. And how long has the realm existed? I asked. I had no idea, and it didn't matter anyway. All countries start out basically the same way. Why, this is now the 14th dynasty, said the captain proudly. So over 6 centuries since the Great Council. Great Council? I asked. Why, yes, he said, shocked that I had missed out on the entire history of another of our planet's momentary empires. That is where they drew up the Great Law. Great Law? I asked. Now the captain looked positively scandalized at my ignorance. The great law, of course, he insisted, settling forth the structure of the realm, a whole new idea in government. Idea? Whose idea? Why, as everyone knows or should know, the vision of the great forefather for a new and better country? I paused for a moment. Started out as an idea in someone's mind then. His eyes narrowed. And how many stations are there like this one? 100? Several hundred? And thousands of other buildings with tens of thousands of people working to govern? How many hundreds of thousands more? Has not one idea in one man's mind, has it not grown into this country, and the idea of it in thousands and thousands of minds? Do not ideas begin and grow and then spread fantastically, just like any other seed? Are not even the hopes that drive people to work at an occupation for their entire lifetimes for decades born in a single idea as they begin their careers? Come on, Captain. Mental seeds don't grow any less than mango pits, and probably a lot more. He looked stunned, as anyone who really grasps what we had just said should have been, and he began a few minutes' silent review of his entire life, I think. And then he said, as anyone at this point would, "But is there anything that we can do? I mean, there are so many things, so many mistakes in every person's life. Can these seeds, can they be changed before they ripen? Is there anything like a counter seed or any special way of creating very powerful good seeds?" "Oh, Captain," I said, "that is the perfect question. And the answer is yes, of course, yes, or it would all be so impossible. We have a job, each. We have a job to do. We have to try to get the old bad seeds out, the ones already planted in our mind in the past by mistake. Whatever old good seeds we have, we need to reinforce them, cultivate them. From now on, we need to be careful only to plant the good seeds and never the negative ones. We need to learn every detail about how the seeds operate and how to create some new super seeds that would be powerful enough even to change the way we see the mortal nature of our bodies and more. In short, we must become experts at the intelligent management of our mental seeds. As the master puts it in his short book, we must become as gardeners." The captain nodded resolutely, still obviously shaken by the review of the seeds he knew he possessed already. We went through the poses and the silent wishes for his men, and at the end of the sitting he opened his eyes and said to me, "The strangest thing has happened." "What's that?" "The sergeant. He has asked me to give him some lessons in yoga." I tried to look sufficiently surprised, but the captain wasn't really paying any attention to me anyway. Instead, his eyes were wide open, unseeing, in some kind of minor panic. "Well, what do you think I should do?" he said. "Do?" I asked. "Why, teach him, of course. Help him to the best of your ability." "But I've never done anything like that before. You know, I'm not even quite sure where to start." "Well, that's the easy part," I assured him. Get him to do his yoga for someone else's sake, to help someone else. You can't go wrong from there. Best kind of seeds there are." The captain nodded gratefully. "Makes sense," he said, and then paused with a mixture of emotions passing across his face. "And..." He continued then, "Yes," I said, "and he has asked if he may bring his son here to the jail to have classes with you." "I love to teach children," I said. "They are wonderful students, very open-minded to new ideas, even big ones. But he has a fairly serious problem, you see. He was hurt. He was burned rather seriously in an accident." The captain paused again. "Frankly, I'm not sure you'll be able to help him." I looked at the captain steadily, and Katrin came to me again. It felt so wonderful whenever that happened. "Captain," I said, "there's one thing you must be very clear about."
"Well, what's that?"
"It's about things," I said. "The way we make things, the way our mind makes us see things, the way that all things really happen. You see, if the way something like a pen really happens is that seeds in our mind are forcing us to see it that way, and if we change seeds like this around with some kind of seed management, with what the master calls gardening, then it doesn't really matter how big a thing is, you see. I mean, the same rules apply to pens and to some sore backs and to bodies that die and to loved ones that have left us and to terrible injuries. And I waved my arms around us to the whole world.
Chapter 31, Breaking the Circle.
When the boy arrived, he absolutely refused to come into the bars. The sergeant did everything a good father would do, from playfulness to sternness, but nothing worked. He would not come inside the bars. Finally, I said, "Sergeant, sir, just leave him out there on the bench with something to play with. And then, if you would, please just leave my door open. And please, I think it will help if you could bring my little dog in." His face darkened ever so slightly, but his new leaf was still turned over, and he grudgingly brought me Long Life. We had a wonderful play together. It was the first time he'd seen my cell from the inside, and we were both resting it off, out of breath, in the front corner when the boy wandered over very cautiously and gave my little lion that look that says, "Can I pet you?" And of course he could, and the boy was inside before he knew it. "Now, my puppy, you see," I said to him. "He's been tied up out back for the longest time, and so his legs, you see," I held him up between us, "they've gotten short, you see." The boy nodded in sympathy. "And so it would really be a big help to him and to me, because we often have to walk long ways together. It would be a big help if you could come in before class a little early each time and give him a good pet all over, but especially on his legs." And the boy nodded quietly, and we started some new seeds going there in the garden of his mind. Before he left, he told me his name. It was Ajit, the undefeatable, and truly his heart was so. The most important principle a mental gardener needs is to know about the circle. I said this to the captain. "The circle?" he queried. "Circle," I repeated. "You see, the way bad seeds work is very nasty. The worst thing about bad seeds is that they make us plant more bad seeds, sort of how all the crops that ever were in the world were only able to happen because there were seeds saved over from the crops the year before. Do you get the idea?" The captain nodded. "Now, the master is talking about this idea when he says, 'And the negative thoughts are their very root.'" "Which negative thoughts?" asked the captain. "And whose root?" "We spoke about them already," I said, "but this is where we tie it all together, because you need this to do the gardening well. Let's choose a real example, and then I can show you how the circle works. Let's pretend, say, that you have a boss here at the station. And let's say that, like a lot of bosses, he walks in every once in a while and he screams at you, usually for something you didn't do anyway." "Not difficult to imagine," replied the captain. "Now, the first step in the circle is that habit that we're born with, the one the master was talking about when he said we misunderstand our world. Things are not themselves. Things that are not themselves seem to us as if they were. He means, for example, that we are born with the habit of believing that a pen is a pen by itself, and not because seeds are going off in our mind and making us see it that way. And the proof that it's not a pen by itself is, The cow thing, I remember, he said, a little petulantly, but it was important to remind him that we were already agreed on that part. Step two in the circle is what the master calls selfness, meaning the tendency to believe that things are happening by themselves from their side, and it awakens again in us, even in the womb, triggered by our first experiences of other objects. I recall that pretty well, remarked the captain, but I saw from his eyes that he was still with me. Step three, I continued, a specific object like your yelling boss, something that makes you feel strongly, either good or bad, steps into your day. The tendency to believe that he is bad by himself, that he is bad from his own side, suddenly comes upon you so strong that your misunderstanding graduates into what the master called grasping. And maybe, remember, maybe you've already learned the thing about the pen. I mean, maybe you already understand that your screaming boss is just like the pen, that you are experiencing an unpleasant boss at that moment only because certain seeds planted long ago are going off in your own mind, forcing you to see what is otherwise just an odd collection of colors and shapes and sounds. You see it as a boss screaming at you. And of course, he's not unpleasant by himself, from his own side, even in that tense moment, because, I paused to let him fill it in, because, well, I guess he needed only a second to think about it, because, you see, there could be another office worker sitting right next to you, say a rival for the position the boss himself gave you a few months before, and this other worker probably perceives this same boss, this same difficult moment, as something quite reasonable, even entertaining, and who has finally become aware of how truly incompetent you are. Just so, I said. And you see, a boss who is unpleasant by himself, a boss who is unpleasant from his own side, could never also be a reasonable or pleasant boss at the very same moment, could he? No more than a pen could simultaneously be a pen and a meal, you see. So far, so good, smiled the captain. Good, I repeated. So, at step three, we already have you grasping onto the screaming boss as something unpleasant from its own side, and not because there are unpleasant seeds ripening within your own mind and making you see him that way. And by the way, I sped it past him, what kind of negative action do you think you'd have to have done in the past to get this kind of unpleasant boss yelling at you now? Oh, I don't know, he said offhandedly. I guess you must have yelled like that at someone else before. Right, I said, and rolled ahead. So, on to step four in the circle. Having forgotten now that what you are seeing and hearing in front of you is happening because of the seeds, which were planted long ago, you begin to dislike the boss. You get angry at him. Something akin to blaming your toe because you stubbed it. In this chain of negative thoughts, you see, seeing things wrong as this habit came into life with you, seeing things wrong even as you see your first things, grasping to this wrong way of seeing things under pressure, and then finally disliking something strongly because of your misunderstanding, they are what the master calls the very root of the other two. What other two? Asked the captain. You tell me, I said. What happens when your dislike for the yelling boss, however misinformed it is, gets strong enough? What happens when you get reactive? Well, that's easy, answered the captain, his eyes misting over as he recalled his big office days. You yell back at him. Right, I said. And so this chain of negative thoughts has triggered what the master calls the things we do. Step number five in the circle and the things we do, they plant the storehouse, as he said it, which is step number six. We plant new seeds in our minds. Seeds to see, he said, the whole process suddenly dawning on him. Seeds to see another person yelling at us in the future. He paused. Oh my goodness, he said, clutching his head in that way he'd developed ever since we'd started talking about the seeds. Oh my goodness, what you're saying is that our most natural and automatic reaction to the negative things that happen to us all day is precisely the one and only reaction that would plant more seeds for us to see more of the same thing happening to us again in the future. It's all one huge vicious circle, I said, and I smiled, despite the vicious circle. Because the first thing you need to stop an enemy is who he is. And the captain had just gotten over that hurdle. And you need to see, I went on, you need to see one more thing. How this all ties back into the channels and the subtle winds that flow within them and what we talked about from the very beginning with your back. His hand went again, automatically, from his head to where he used to hold his back. We spoke about the two main channels, the difficult channels that twist around the middle channel and choke it at certain points, the channels called sun and moon running down close on either side of the spine. Right, I said, and if you also remember, we said that within them run two very basic negative types of inner winds, tied to the two most basic negative thoughts. I remember, he said, chewing on his lip with concentration, mistaken thoughts about things running on the right in the sun channel, and mistaken thoughts about our own thoughts or feelings, about what we used to see things. Running on the left in the moon channel. Exactly, I said. And now you can begin to appreciate just what a problem these two channels and their two inner winds are. Well, the thoughts that ride upon the winds, according to what we've been talking about these last few days, are the very root of all of our trouble. I mean, that most basic tendency, born inside of us, as we ourselves are born, to misunderstand ourselves and everything around us. Right again, I said. Then I paused for a moment, looking out the window. I mean, I said, if you were really tired of having bosses or anyone else scream at you, what is the one thing you'd want to avoid doing at all costs? Screaming at others, he simply said. But what if the boss screaming at you makes you very upset and you are just about to scream back? Well, I guess you'd have to stop and catch yourself, even though it might be very difficult in the heat of the moment. You'd have to stop and say to yourself, whoa now, wait just a minute. I have to see this boss screaming at me now because of the seeds in my mind from the past, maybe from screaming at someone else. No way I'm going to set that vicious cycle in motion one more time. And then I think if you tried to remember this, no matter how much he screamed, no matter how upset you felt, then you'd have a good chance of breaking the cycle, the circle, right where it starts. Perfect, I smiled. And if you were able, in that one most difficult moment, to keep all this in mind, then which channel do you think your thoughts would be running in? He paused and then answered, well, since it's such a right thought, then I guess it would be cracking into the middle channel, at least a little. Just so, I said. And any small amount of wind moving in the middle channel also means that much less wind moving in the side channels. And so it would loosen up knots all over your body, he mused. The most powerful bad winds getting deflated, you'd feel happier, and your body, well, it would just naturally get more and more healthy and strong. And then he stopped abruptly. Miss Friday, what would happen if you could get all the winds into the middle channel? I smiled on the outside and sang on the inside. He was getting close, but all I said was, that's coming, the way Katrin would have. What I really wanted to point out now, I continued, is just that it's hard to remember all this in that one critical moment when you most need to, when you want to be reactive, when the boss is actually screaming in your face. And so you'd want to give yourself the best chance you could to remember. I mean, you'd want to practice thinking about how it's really your mind that's making you see things. You'd want to stop at odd moments throughout your day and practice just thinking thinking this way for a minute or two. That in itself would head some of the inner winds toward the middle channel, giving the side channel less power every minute you could keep this kind of thinking up. Spending as well a few minutes now and then to practice taking away others' troubles and giving them what they're wishing for, just mentally, that would have the same effect. And there is, of course, one last very practical, doable way of heading inner winds toward the middle channel. It's going at it the other way around. Instead of working on your thoughts, which are like horsemen atop the horses, you could go to work directly on the inner winds. It's like coming and taking the reins of the horse and walking him down a different road. And then the person riding on his back comes along automatically. We move the winds on purpose, and then the thoughts riding atop them are forced to come along. That's why you do yoga, exclaimed the captain, catching on. You do the yoga poses, the exercises, because if you do them right, they loosen up the knots almost by brute force, knocking on the pipes. And then at least some small amount of the wind is sent towards the middle channel, by definition, as the knots are relaxed. And because some number of your thoughts are riding on these winds, some number of your thoughts themselves are already directed to the middle channel. And thoughts that start going to the middle channel, they're changed, aren't they? They are, I nodded. Doing the yoga exercises, he said excitedly, it then actually gets you ready to have the ideas that we've been talking about. You're able to hear them and grasp them better if you've already been doing the poses, he raced on. Why, it's probably even why you yourself have been able to get all of this stuff, I said with a smile. And even why you just got why you get this stuff, I beamed. Sort of like you see starting a good version of the circle, building up its own power to keep itself going. Poses help winds, which help thoughts, which help poses. Why, I never would have thought of that, he fairly squealed. And then I took him through some really hard yoga poses so he wouldn't forget how good it was for him and his winds. Chapter 32, The Fortress of Little Things. The corporal led me back to my cell that day, and we ran into the sergeant standing in front of Busuku's cell, screaming and banging his sticks on the bar. Idiot, he blustered. Why, you can't even steal a cow right. So what makes you think you could get this right? Idiot, am I? Roared Busuku, nose to nose with the sergeant through the bars, his chubby red face and his little belly quaking. Well, just come inside here for 1 minute, you brainless thug. Come in without that stick and I'll show you. Show me what? Raved the sergeant. The knuckle pose, bellowed Busuku. And then he caught sight of the corporal and me and screamed out, Miss Friday, come over here a moment, if you please. And then to the sergeant, we can settle this right here and now. The corporal ambled over to the two, still clutching my arm, his mouth wide open with all the excitement. Good, exclaimed Busuku, his jowls shaking. Now, Miss Friday, listen to this. The sergeant here, after 3 or 4 lessons with the captain, you see, he says he's learned the right way to do the mountain pose from the captain, and he says the way I do it is wrong. I smiled and started to answer, but the sergeant butted in. I didn't say that the captain taught me the right way, you idiot. I said I figured out the best way to do the mountain pose. On your back, you said. Busuku looked at me with the eyes of a condemned prisoner, pleading for his life. Please, Miss Friday. I mean, can you believe it? I mean, the very first pose of all. The pose where any fool at all would know you are standing there, getting ready to start something like the bowing to the sun. And this miserable excuse for an officer of the law, he says you start on your back? Can you believe it? Tell him it isn't so. I opened my mouth again, but again the sergeant cut me off. Look, Busuku, If you had any brains, you'd just get down and do it that way, I said. And then, if it's wrong, well, then Miss Friday and even the corporal, I mean anybody, could see that it's wrong if you just do it. Well, that's just what I'll do then, cried Busuku, and he flopped down on the floor on his back with his mighty belly pointing to the sky. There was a moment of silence as we looked at the mountain of the belly pointing skyward. Like I said, declared the sergeant, there it is, the mountain pose. And without another word, he turned and walked back to the room in the front. Busuku laid on the floor, staring in rage at the ceiling. The corporal was silent for a full 2 minutes and then turned to me with a look of surprise. I think he made a joke. And he stood there in shock, as did I, and poor Busuku. At our next class, I came into the captain and said, time to get down to some basic gardening. I mean, the master at this point jumps straight into explaining what the most powerful good seeds to plant are. It's a short list, and it's designed to save us all time by getting us right into the most crucial kinds of seeds we should be planting. And the master presents them in such a way that we also learn their opposites, the kinds of actions that plant bad seeds, the actions we want to avoid. And then, along the way, as we work through this list, I thought we could keep going over more of the questions that will naturally come up in your mind about how the seeds work to produce our world. You're the teacher, exclaimed the captain, and I knew immediately that he had begun to experience the difficulty of being a teacher himself, sort of a sweet revenge that teachers get when their students take on pupils and become teachers themselves. Thank you, I said sunnily. Now, the master gives the first powerful way of planting good seeds when he says, the first form of self-control is avoiding harm to anyone. The self-control part is obvious, I began. Seems like the whole key is self-control, said the captain. I mean, trying to control our old instincts because they just keep us going round and round in that circle of trouble. Bad seeds from yelling at someone before makes us see the boss yelling at us now, and then our natural instinct is to yell back, which happens to be the best way to get more yelling. It's the only way to get more yelling, I said. The exact best and only way to plant more seeds to see more bosses yelling at us in the future. But then he hesitated and frowned. A little problem with that, he said. Okay to ask? It was good that he was careful about not interrupting the flow of the class, but this was a good way to flow, if I guess correctly where he was going. Go ahead, I said. Well, suppose that someone does come in and starts yelling at you or someone. What are you supposed to do? I mean, just let them go on, realizing that it's your own seeds? And what if they say, go on even further and start hitting someone? Beautiful, beautiful question, I replied. And the answer is that often we have to act. We have to try our very best to stop violence. We have to do what we can to stop violence done to anyone. And by doing that, we plant good seeds, you see. But as we try to prevent violence being done, we can never do so with hatred or anger, because that would be planting very powerful bad seeds. We must try to restrain others who do violence without using violence, especially without thoughts of violence. And I'll ask you another question, I said. And it's a little difficult, so you have to think clearly. His face got that look of official duty, but he was careful not to do his concentration scowl. Suppose we do come across someone yelling at someone else, or even trying to hurt them physically, and suppose we try to restrain them without malice and without violence. Suppose further that we succeed in doing so, and they stop hurting the other person. I ask you, why has the violence stopped? The captain nodded, and then did scowl with concentration. Finally looked back into my eyes. "Well," he said, "why, I suppose the violence has stopped for the person to whom it was being committed because their own seeds planted in their own minds by themselves in the past, well, they've changed. The bad seeds have flowered and spent and disappeared, and now new seeds have ripened to take their place in the person's day, in the flow of their life, and these new seeds are forcing them to see or bringing them the experience of violence stopping." He paused then before the crucial hurdle in thinking that we must all leap over one day. But then, it doesn't really matter whether I try to help or not, he said, almost painfully. If the person being hurt has seeds to see my efforts help them, then they will. If they don't, then my efforts won't help. So why make the effort at all? I nodded. This is one of the most important questions of all, and you have to listen carefully to the answer and never forget it. Otherwise, you could one day fall off what the great masters of the past called the cliff of the great mistake. There are several issues here. First of all, if you notice, we have just explained precisely why it doesn't always work when you try to help someone else, no matter how hard you try or how good your intentions are. That in and of itself is a sacred lesson and will prevent you from ever becoming bitter or hesitant to continue helping others, should one or two such efforts fail to work out. It will give you the strength and the clarity to know that regardless, you must continue to help others. You must devote your life to it. Secondly, it's important to realize that the person you may be helping the most is the person who was committing the violence. I paused to let him pick up the thread. Because he's in the process of planting tremendous negative seeds. He's inflicting future pain upon himself, which far exceeds whatever he's doing to his victim at the moment. And then the captain added, because of the way that seeds grow into things so much bigger than the seeds themselves. Exactly, I said. So really, your act of kindness here is towards the person doing the violence. That's why it's so crucial that you avoid hating him in the process of restraining him. You stop him because you love him, murmured the captain. And then, finally, I said, you are doing sort of a cosmic public service whenever you risk yourself to stand up against violence. First of all, people see your example, they take hope, and they follow it. Secondly, and here's perhaps the kindest thing you're doing, you are consciously planting extraordinary new seeds in your own mind when you take a stand against violence being done to another. If you truly master this ultimate form of gardening, if you succeed in working with your own seeds so well that the inner channels undergo a profound change and you become a being of pure light within a world of the same light, well, then you really have a gift to offer to all of living kind. And you will. Because whatever you have done yourself, you can show others how to do, mused the captain. I see, Miss Friday, I really see, and I thank you for that. We paused, both of us, for that moment, both dreaming of that day, and then I took us back to the master's first form of self-control. So, self-control, I said, as the master means it, it's just keeping yourself from making problems for yourself, for the you you will be in the future. It's really just being nice to a you that you haven't yet been, you see. The captain nodded. And that's one of the most important ideas in the master's whole book, you see, I said from my heart. It's the whole thing about working with the seeds, with gardening. We are really just trying to shape our future. And it's exciting, you see, because since everything works through seeds, then we finally have a choice in the matter. we can consciously and purposely design and build our own future into a garden paradise. We are finally in control of what happens in our lives, or rather, we are in control of what will happen. As the master puts it, the pain that we are ridding ourselves of is all the pain that would have come to us in the future. It means you can't stop the pain of the present moment just by wishing it away. That's coming from seeds planted in the past. You can't stop the pain of the present moment just by wishing it away or working at it in ways that life has already shown us don't really work. You can't put your hand on a huge mango tree and push it back into the ground. It's too late. We have to deal at the level of seeds before they start to grow into the huge things they will become. We are gardening for the future. But how long, demanded the captain? How far into the future? How long does it take before the seeds we are working with today give their effect in the future? That's coming, I said. We'll get to that. We have to get to it. But I can tell you now that there are ways, special ways, of making the seeds grow almost instantaneously. And of course, I'll teach you that too. Now, back to the idea of self-control, of learning not to lay things around your cosmic house that you're just going to stub your toe on later. And that's all the point I was trying to make. I know that word self-control smacks of rules and punishment and guilt, and I want to make very sure that you never think of it that way here in the Master's Short Book. Self-control here is simply the art of avoiding future pain for yourself. Avoiding new bad seeds in your own mind. That kind of self-control sounds more like pleasure, replied the captain. Good, I said, and now we should get on to what it means to avoid harming anyone. The master here is beginning a discussion of things we do physically with our bodies, which plant powerful seeds. Later on, he'll get into things we do with our words, and what we say, and then lastly, things we do just by thinking. So here he's saying at the very beginning that we can plant immense good seeds if we are careful never to cause anyone physical harm. It makes a lot of sense that he starts with that, the captain thought out loud. If our whole goal with yoga is to clear up problems with our health, to make our bodies and our hearts strong and clear, then, of course, the seeds we'd want to avoid the most are those that deal with harming others. I looked out the window for a moment and then came back to him. That last thing you said about harming others, it gives me thought. I mean, you know what it is to hurt someone physically. We don't need to talk about that. So perhaps the most important thing we could do today is to talk about some of the gray areas, some ways of causing harm that are not so obvious, and also talk a bit about the practical details. By practical details, I mean that, well, suppose you go up to someone and you tell them that avoiding physical harm to others is the key to success in yoga, that if you have in your mind seeds of never hurting others, then you will get very good at the poses and the sitting and the breathing, and it will all have an extraordinary effect on your body and your happiness too. The normal reaction you get from most people, though, is something like, well, actually, I don't have any problems that way at all. I have never, say, killed or seriously injured a person, and almost never in my life struck another person. So I would guess that yoga should start working for me right away. But then maybe it only works for some, or only slowly, or maybe not much at all. And then they start to wonder why. And it's important right then to explain these seeds to them carefully so they can do something about it the right way and start getting real results before they get discouraged. You see, the vast majority of the seeds that run our lives haven't come from major events like murdering another person or stealing all the money, say, from the business we work for. It's not these large single actions that plant most of our seeds. Rather, it's the small actions and words and thoughts that we do on a constant daily basis over the length of our lifetime. And so when we want to turn seeds around, the best way is to start with the very small, continually daily things that we do. If we're trying to learn not to harm others, for example, we might just look around for small ways we can protect their health, enhance their health and their lives. Maybe wiping up a puddle of water on the floor because someone might come along and slip in it and hurt themselves. Maybe it's just deciding not to talk or eat while driving a car down the road, knowing that one day the distraction might cause us to hurt someone seriously. Maybe it's going out of our way to say something encouraging to someone at work who seems tense, knowing that this emotion of tension will hurt them physically if they keep it up over a few years' time. What I'm talking about is maintaining a constant, modest kindness, which is always looking for ways to protect and enhance others. All day long, just in the little world we live in, this is the fortress of little things. This is the most powerful and at the same time most enjoyable way to plant the seeds in our mind. The seeds that would take us to the highest goals of life. The captain started looking around at the papers still covered a good part of the floor of his office. It was a good start. Concentrating on the small things has another advantage, I said. We call it the fortress principle. If you're a great king with lots of treasures and a family to protect, you might want to build a wall around your palace. And then just to make sure that no one ever breaches that wall, you might want to put in a moat around the outside of the wall. Nobody gets over the wall because they never get past the moat. And then you're really serious. You might want to plant a lot of nasty thorn bushes all around the outside of the moat. Because if no one ever gets as far as the moat, then certainly no one will get to the wall. So it's like a group of concentric circles, rings of protection within rings of protection. Having an enemy break through the outside ring represents, say, causing harm to anyone else by accident or negligence. If you are always careful and aware not to harm others this way, then you will obviously be less likely to do a small harm on purpose, which would be like having the enemy slip across the moat. And if you never purposely do a small harm to anyone, then of course you will never see your enemy breaking through the inside wall, which would be something very serious, say killing another human being intentionally. And so living with the small things, thinking constantly all day about even small things that we can do to protect the lives and enhance the happiness of others, simple kindnesses, powerful considerations for those around us, really, this is the key to the treasure house of seeds within our minds. I looked up at the captain and decided he needed a break. It was a lot to digest in one day. I'll tell you what, I said. You try over the next week to think about some of those gray areas, about things that may or may not cause harm to others, things you're not quite sure about. Have them ready when we start next time. The captain smiled. He loved questions, and that's what made him such a perfect student. Of course, I was still careful not to tell him so, because, you know, a big head doesn't make a perfect student or a teacher.